everybody. Welcome to It's in the Experience, a podcast from the Association for Experiential Education. I'm Sherry Bagley, the Executive Director and the host of this discussion. I'm really happy to have with me today two of our current board members who are the outgoing secretary and the current secretary. I myself am a past Board of Directors secretary, so shout out to all of those secretaries out there keeping minutes and keeping everyone in line. Roseanne Mistretta is the Assistant Director for Program Development for the State University of New York, SUNY, Master Teacher Counselor Program. Previously, she was the director of both the Center for Experiential Learning and AFS Outside, a comprehensive outdoor learning program at Abington Friends School. In those roles, she established the nationally accredited AFS Arboretum and Nature Playground and several innovative experiential learning initiatives connecting students to future careers. At AFS, she was also an educator, teaching elementary school general science and high school environmental science. Before her teaching career, she was a senior attorney for the United States Environmental Protection Agency Region 3, where she handled Superfund hazardous waste cases. Post-college, she was assistant instructor for Minnesota Outward Bound School and a canoe instructor for several camps. Her educational path included obtaining a master's in environmental education from Arcadia University and a Juris Doctor from the University of New Hampshire School of Law. She is an active AE volunteer and also serves as the Taconic Chapter of Trout Unlimited, Canaan Neighbors Helping Neighbors, and Walking Our Talk Women's Professional Group board member. She's a prior member of the U.S. EPA National Environmental Education Advisory Council. In her free time, you can find Roseanne hiking with her husband, Steve, and border collie Jasper in the Taconic and Berkshire Mountains. She also loves fly fishing and cooking Italian food. She's proud that her two children have forged careers in biological fisheries sciences and experiential education. Our other guest, Jeremy Slaby, has worked in the fields of outdoor and experiential education for over a decade in roles ranging from ropes course technician, escape room artist, and various forms of a classroom teacher. He received a BA in adventure education from Fort Lewis College and more recently an MPS in environmental studies and sustainability from Unity Environmental University. Currently, he is the science teacher and experiential programs coordinator at the Jewish Day School of Metropolitan Seattle. In this role, he teaches upper elementary and middle school sciences, develops and implements experiential programming opportunities, and integrates the Jewish values around repairing the world and pursuing justice to inspire students to be agents of positive change within their community. Some of the highlights of the science program that he continues to develop include a climate action-centered curriculum, grade-level overnight field trips, the Environmental and Climate Observation, ECO, field study, and the Solutions in Science Expo, a modern take on the traditional science fair that takes place annually. Outside of the school day, Jeremy volunteers as a member of the AEE's Board of Directors, where he has supported the organization in its efforts to build stronger relationships with classroom educators, as well as the next generation of experiential educators. Otherwise, he can be found hammocking by a lake, drawing or painting fictional maps, making ice cream, or collecting Pokemon cards. Welcome, Jeremy and Roseanne. I'm exhausted by your bios. You both do so much.
It sounds so much better when you hear it written out. It was like, oh, that's actually pretty great. I like that.
Jeremy is way cooler than mine, just saying.
Not true.
Yeah. No, both of you. Very accomplished. Thank you again for being here. We start the podcast out with a little initiative. We've done commonalities, and lately I've been doing icebreaker questions just so you two can get to know each other a little better. I can get to know you a little better, and our listeners out there can get to know you a little better. And Jeremy, I'm asking this one in particular because I know you just got your first car, which is very exciting. So what is one thing that you always keep in your car?
I actually thought about this question, and the center console between the front two seats where you can put stuff in, that is and will forever be a snack compartment.
Hello.
So I put all of my snacks in there, and I have a bag in the trunk with backup snacks for when I run out of the snacks in there. So that's the one thing that I will always have there.
Roseanne, what do you keep in your car?
So mine's three things, but they all go together. Stuff for my dog, Jasper. So I keep a water bowl, balls, and treats. But I think I need to start keeping treats for me as well.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. I think there might be some snacks in my center console too. Definitely. And there's always a dog leash in my car too. And Jeremy, what do you drive?
I drive a 2024 Subaru Forester Sport. And yes, I am very proud of that fact because I am running on 30 and I wanted a car / needed one. So.
And Rosé, do you have a Subaru also?
I don't.
Oh, okay.
I have the next best thing, which is a 10-year-old Volvo Cross Country.
Oh, Volvo. Okay. See, I'm pushing for Subaru to sponsor AE. So anytime we can mention Subaru on the podcast, I think it's good. A lot of Subaru owners, but I can see Volvo sponsoring us too. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. We get a little more intense as we move on here. Three things you would do if you were invisible.
So this required a lot of thought on my part.
Never thought about being invisible.
No, it's not the superpower I would choose, but I did come up with three things. First of all, I would get on planes and travel everywhere, especially
in
Sicily, where my parents are from. Oh, and then my favorite was I would travel through the natural world at night and observe all the animals that normally hide from people, like fishers and bobcats, like just sit in my backyard invisible.
That's a great one.
That was one of mine, actually. Similar. Yeah, similar about seeing animals you don't normally see.
And then the other thing I was like, I would go to museums or other places after hours. When
nice.
And just have the whole place to myself.
Nice. Hey. I like that.
I like that, sis. All right. So what were your other two, Jeremy?
Let's see. Animals, one. The second one, we're going to go with going to, similar to Roseanne's last one, but specifically to the giant, like, telescope places, observatories, that's the word.
Yeah.
Observatories at night, hopefully when people aren't there.
Yeah. Right?
I feel like they might be there at night. I don't know. Anyway. And the third one, is this invisibility able to walk through walls or is it just invisible and not?
Just invisible.
Okay, yeah. Great. Just making sure. What would that? I don't know.
I love that Jeremy's expanding superpowers. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just in case. Gotta make sure. If I could be invisible, I would probably sit on a bench in some of the most populated places and just watch people because I think people watching is so fun and so interesting to see how they interact when people aren't watching them.
Yeah.
And not in the creepy way, obviously, just to
see. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I gotcha. And this is also for everybody out there who's a teacher who's listening, who needs a little extra activity. What is or was your go-to activity for getting students' attention when you were in the classroom?
Let's see. Since I know some of my students will probably listen to this, activities when we have time could range from me taking them outside when the weather is nicer. And that is a hint to them that will likely happen in the future. If it's not nice outside, it's usually a kind of centering activity that gets them in a routine. But also, we just finished our science expo, so we're figuring that out still.
Gotcha.
What that looks like the rest of the school year.
So I would have to say I would fall back on my elementary school teaching because it was the most fun to get them excited, especially about physics. So usually about anything involving air pressure or water pressure. So I would do the whole fill the cup with water, put an index card over it, flip it over. And of course, the index card stays there and they all go wild because it's like, what? How does that happen? My favorite is when you put the egg on top of the milk jar for you throw some matches, lit matches in, and then the egg gets sucked into the milk jar.
Uh-huh.
It's very hard to bring them back after that, but they will pretty much listen to anything physics after that.
Mm-hmm. We are just starting a physics unit this week, and I brought in all of my connects to make a roller coaster to do physics things. So I guess you could say that's what we're going to be doing. Physics is definitely a good way to do it. I like that.
Nice for experiential learning.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Magic tricks. So magic trick.
Magic is just science you don't understand. I forget who said that. Someone said that.
All right. So both of you have illustrious careers, have done a lot of things. How did you get involved in experiential education?
I'll start. So I would have to say that I grew up in a small town and not with a lot of access to the outdoors. So I went to Girl Scout camp every summer. And I think that's where I learned that, first of all, anything is possible. And second of all, everything's more fun when you're doing it, not just hearing about it. I did get a little bit sidetracked going to law school and becoming a lawyer. So putting all that aside, I came to my senses and back to the master's in environmental ed. And then I don't think there was any other way for me to teach besides experiential education, especially when teaching about the environment, because I think everything is better when you're teaching it outside anyway.
Jeremy, how about you? How did you get involved in experiential education?
I grew up in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, much better than Philly. I'm going to throw those out there.
I didn't grow up in Philly, by the way.
For me, I grew up with a family who liked to be in the outdoors. And so I was very fortunate and privileged to go on camping trips every summer. When my mom, being from Germany, we would visit them in the summer most years. And they have a cabin in the woods at a lake, and it's really quiet and really serene there, which is nice. And so that's like the entry point into at least the outdoor aspect of experiential education. And when it comes to the teaching piece, I first went to college for education and political science at Hartwick College in Oneonta, New York. And there I had some fantastic professors. One was Betsy Bloom. The other was Mark Davies. Shout out to both of them, because their teaching was experiential focused. And it also incorporated a lot of social justice topics, from poverty to race to any number of other things. And the interweaving of both those fields, social justice and experiential education. And then I left Hartwick and transferred to Fort Lewis College in Durango and got my degree in adventure education, because for whatever reason, I went on a hike from DC to Pittsburgh that previous summer, and I intercepted a group of Outward Bound students. I think they were fifth or sixth grade, and I asked if I could facilitate a few things because I worked at the ropes course at Hartwick, and they said, yeah, sure, why not? And so I facilitated them for an hour. It was fantastic. It was so much fun. I was like, this is what I want to go into. And so I got back home, Googled experiential education degrees, and the first one that popped up was adventure education. And so then I spent time in Durango, and I'm in Seattle.
You came across a group of students on the trail, and you were like, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I played some games with you all.
Yeah.
And they said yes.
Their facilitator people that they were with said, yeah, I had previously explained to them before I went up to them and be all creepy. Hey, I want to facilitate your kids in some games. Because that's weird. I chatted with them and asked who the group was and got to know them. And then explained, hey, I have experience facilitating groups on ropes courses and whatnot. Can I do a group activity? Yeah, sure. And so adults were still there. Wasn't like a stranger danger kind of thing. Now that I'm saying it, sounds way creepier than it should be, but
no, not at all. I was thinking how brave of you. No, that's an incredibly bold move. I think it's awesome. Did you mainly work with college kids at Hartwick?
Yes. At the ropes course at the environmental campus, we had college groups, student groups, and then we also had a few community groups come out. So we facilitated them on high and low ropes courses, which was a lot of fun.
So from these beginnings, what is your work focusing on now?
I'm going to go with helping students find the areas in their lives that they're passionate about so that they can create positive change in the future, because we need it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say that I work with teachers now, classroom teachers and school counselors, and we're basically helping teachers do exactly what Jeremy said. Like, we're helping them become agents of change in their classrooms. We have over 1,700 teachers in our program.
Roseanne, can you explain a little bit more about that program? Because it's really unique.
It is. The state of New York really has a wonderful approach to K-12 STEM teaching. And now we've added school counselors to the mix. Teachers apply to the program and they have to already be experienced teachers, but also have goals for their own growth as professionals. And they get accepted to the program for 4 years and they get quite a hefty stipend added to their paycheck, which is pretty awesome. And then they get all this amazing professional development, but they also create it for each other. So it becomes this huge network of really invested teachers, some of the best teaching I think I've ever seen. And they just love their craft.
Wow.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Do you know, are there other states that have programs like that, or is it?
I don't think so. I did, when I first joined the program, I tried to see if there was anything comparable, but I don't know if there's, I don't think there's much out there like it.
That's great. Jeremy, the fact that you didn't just say I'm focused on teaching science, it's such a testament to how you teach and how you think about teaching. What an amazing thing to say rather than, oh, I teach science. No, that's not what you're focusing on.
I agree. It's the best.
Let's take a quick break. You're invited to present at the Association for Experiential Education's 52nd Annual International Conference, happening November 14th through the 16th, 2024 in Estes Park, Colorado. We are seeking workshops from a wide variety of themes, such as outdoor and adventure education, therapeutic adventure, classroom education, higher education, experience-based training and development, risk management and safety, and more. Call for proposals opens March 8th and will close on April 26th. Share your knowledge with our community. Go to aee.org for more information.
So when we talk about experiential education in the classroom, I think oftentimes people think, oh, you take your kids outside or you go for a hike or you walk around the schoolyard, that type of thing. But how do you all see experiential education being used in the classroom, or how do you use it in the classroom?
I'll speak to one example that I did when I was working with a K-12 program, and we tried to bring teams of teachers together to create programs that were interdisciplinary, experiential, and immersive. So you took people from different content areas or areas of learning, language arts and music and science and math, and you brought them together around a theme to incorporate all of their different areas. I went back to find two examples just to make it a little clearer. One was called The Secrets of Light in Literature, Art, and Science. So you had language arts, the art teacher, science teachers coming together around the concept of light. And then there was another one called The Ins and Outs of H2O, the environmental and scientific issues and beauty of water. I think just an example of how you can, when you bring different areas together, you can really create quite a rich curriculum. And it's not, doesn't have to be focused on the outdoors or just science. It can be all areas of the curriculum.
I, in science, because science does make it easy to do experiential education. It really is. And the way that I look at it, when you take experiential education at its most basic form, you have the hands-on experience piece, and then you have the reflection piece and the application of that. And so what my students will tell you, and what one of them said at the beginning of the school year, because we had a lot of new students this year, we're talking about the program, what to expect in the school year. And one of them was like, so if you need to know one thing about Homori Jeremy's class, it's that he does a lot of reflection. And I was like, I'm really glad you pointed that out, because that is true. Reflection is important. So we do a lot of that. But in terms of the physical experience, I like to get ideas from my students on what they're interested in and what's exciting to them. And for example, we're moving into a physics unit, and in the next handful of weeks, I'm here 1 week, gone another week because of field trips and other in-the-field experiences with students. And so what we're doing, instead of doing units, we're doing like weekly topics. And so this week we're talking and exploring Newton's first two laws of motion with a roller coaster and taking data on speed and weight and force and yada, yada, yada. And then in 2 weeks, we're doing the third law of motion, and we're doing an Angry Birds competition. I'm really excited about. And so if it's nice out, we'll launch some stuff at each other's constructions. If it's not nice out, as in raining a good amount, then we'll do it inside, but with rubber bands and softer balls that aren't tennis balls or marbles. So there's that. Otherwise, I really think a big piece of what we do in science is around what the students are interested in and invested in, because that makes the experience for them.
Yeah. Jeremy, I just have to say that I agree with you. I agree with everything you're saying, but I want to go back to the reflection piece, which I think is so important. And I think it's a piece that can get overlooked, especially even in elementary school. You do the magic, yes, but then you have to do the reflective piece to create that real rich learning. So I love that that was the first thing you said.
And I think it's also important to note, it doesn't have to be like deep reflection all the time. It can be a simple, oh, how did this go? What can I do differently next time? Or drawing pictures. Yeah. Recording something. Absolutely.
Nice. So experiments followed by reflection equals experiential education.
As long as there's the piece of how, what we're going to do next time to make it better, which is literally like the scientific method, different.
Yeah, exactly.
Test and retest.
So obviously you both have been using experiential education in your classrooms, but why do you feel these principles and practices are important? What is the thing that drives you to do this?
Real world experience. The world is a quickly changing and quickly darkening place, it feels. And one of the things that I want to ensure is that students have the tools to navigate that, as well as the tools to figure out how to navigate that with all the stuff we don't know what the future looks like yet. So my background is in climate change in my master's program. And so I have been trying to figure out what the best ways to talk about and explore climate changes with middle schoolers, because it's important, yes, but it's also high anxiety inducing. It can get really challenging depending on how you approach it. So one thing that we have done is really approach it from the solutions perspective. And so this year, our curriculum is focused on one of the three major spheres of the Earth. So this year we're covering atmospheric related topics. And so we started the year off looking at carbon, and we were able to go into the greenhouse effect. We were able to explore the Earth's energy budget. And we did that from a perspective of, these are the facts, this is what it is. And then we introduced different solutions and how it's getting worse. And so we looked at realistic solutions, and we looked at some less realistic solutions, both nature-based and technological?
I agree with that 100%, that it has to be solutions-based. And I love that. I would only add that for me, I always thought that experiential learning brought with this component of collaboration, mm-hmm. because students are doing things. They're not just like an island by themselves. They're usually up moving around. They're talking with each other. They're engaged. And I feel like, as Jeremy's saying, these are things that are so important for the future for children, and for them to learn how to work together is very important. The only other thing I would add is I do think with students doing the things themselves, they learn that it's okay to make mistakes. Mm. And that's a really important thing for them to understand. And then that builds confidence because they can make the mistake and then they can do it again. And then they see that they can do it on their own. So I think it builds a lot of self-esteem.
Yeah, that knowing that you can fail and failing forward, that's always a big component in experiential education. When you're doing ropes course and they're failing at a thing, it's often fascinating to watch kids who have never gotten a chance to fail in school, or failing in school is not an option, where you have to get the best grades, you have to get all the test scores right, you have to know all the spelling words right. So that piece is huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for sharing. If you had to mentor a new teacher in experiential education, what would you advise them to do?
That is so easy for me. I would advise them to connect with other teachers as much as possible, because you can always learn from somebody who's not in your particular area. When I was at my school that I was at for a very long time, I became very close with the art teacher, and we did so many projects together that the kids came up with a new word. We called it SCART, the intersection of science and art. And they would come to the classroom and be like, is it a SCART day? Because we did so many projects together. But she used to do an Alexander Calder circus theme, like where they made the wire circus acts. And so I thought to bring in electricity, and we animated them with electrical. That was wonderful for the kids, but it was also really wonderful for us.
I really like that. This was one of the questions that I felt like I had to put more time thinking in about, because in my brain, I don't, the idea of being a mentor hasn't been an idea that I really think about. And so going back to the idea of collaboration with Roseanne from earlier, I really like the idea of, instead of mentoring someone, collaborating with them, because in my mind, experiential education, and I'm sure we all agree on this, is really about how we interact with people and how we build those learning experiences together. And so collaborating and using the wisdom that everyone comes to the experience with to help inform that whole experience. If I had to give some advice on what a new teacher should do, I agree with Roseanne, connect with other teachers, even if they aren't in your discipline, because there can always be ideas. I am hoping to collaborate with our humanities teacher for next year on an environmental ethics unit. I think that'd be really interesting. And not even like going into the whole Jewish studies aspect, but we have a really awesome Jewish studies program run by the wonderful Nance Adler. And we chat a lot to get ideas and bounce ideas off of each other. So learning all about that.
You both volunteer for AEE and have in many capacities. What causes you to give back to the community? It sounds like, from what you've been saying, collaboration is very important to both of you and community and the future. So I have an idea what your answers are going to be, but I would love to hear from you why you give back.
I think you got it, Sherry. First of all, it is such an amazing organization. Mm-hmm. Everyone is so welcoming and friendly, and it's It's amazing to me. I want to point out one experience that I think was very impactful for me, which was being the board liaison to the Social Justice Task Force, and how the commitment of AE and the task force to social justice in general is just, it's just inspiring. And I feel like everything I learned with them and with the board has really elevated my own teaching practice, teaching and program administration practice. So it's really enhanced my career a lot. And of course, I get to work with Jeremy, which is the best thing ever.
Roseanne, you make working on the board so easy and enjoyable. So, yeah. For me, I think the biggest reason that I give back is when I was at Fort Lewis, I had a professor. His name was Bob Stremba. I only had one class with him. And the whole 3 years I was there, I would always hear about him. And we're like a real small department. And so the odds of me actually running into him were really high. But I never ran into him for 2.5, 2-ish years, which was wild to me, because everyone was talking about Bob Stremba, the head of the department. I don't know who this is. I've never seen this man. In my senior year, I took a class with him. I don't remember what the class was, but what I do remember is the way that he made me feel. And that was both a feeling that I was seen and heard, that what I had to say was important and useful, even if it wasn't, because Bob was the most kind and gentle human I have ever met, but could still punch a hole through a mountain if he needed to. And Bob is the main reason I give back, because he showed that there could be a way in a world that is so angry that you can still be gentle and kind. And I want to make sure that other people can have that.
Thanks, Jeremy. Special place in a lot of people's hearts for Bob Stremba.
Yeah.
For our final question, our reflective question. What is something that you have learned from the other person? Because I know you two spend some time together working on secretary stuff, but also science stuff and teacher stuff and all kinds of things. But what have you learned from each other?
I have an easy answer for that one. Roseanne has taught me the importance of taking a pause and slowing down. Prior to working with Roseanne on the board, I was really bad at that. And so she has really been more of the level head, I feel like, between the two of us. And I really appreciate the constant feeling of, here's the plan, here's what we need to do, but we're going to take our time to do it in a way that's efficient and gets the job done so that we don't rush through it. So Roseanne's pretty great.
Jeremy, you are so great. I'm just going to say, Jeremy has been the best role model for me on the board and off the board. Jeremy, you are so organized. I'm a little scattered. Jeremy always brings me back to what we need to do. And that is really fantastic. Also, honestly, one of the kindest people I've ever met, and also has the ability to be kind and gentle, but also speak his mind when he needs to. And that is something that I continually strive to learn how to do. As I said, Jeremy, fabulous role model and great friend.
Ditto on that one.
Thanks so much for sharing all your journeys and your knowledge. Appreciate you two opening up and spending some time with me. Hopefully our listeners have enjoyed and learned a little bit about experiential education in the classroom. If you want to learn more about experiential education and would like to find a friendship like Jeremy and Roseanne have, you can join our board.
That is true.
Go to aee.org. All our events are on there. We have regional conferences happening throughout the spring. You can put in a submission for a workshop at our conference in November. You can nominate somebody for an award that are happening. All kinds of great stuff on our website. And continue to listen to our podcast and all the episodes. You can subscribe so you don't ever have to miss one. Thanks so much.